This program is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Located at 185 Worcester Street, right on Route 9, they can be reached at 508-545-8105 or at wickedchronicvendorcommons.com. Wicked Chronic is a boutique-style retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products such as Wiccan cannabis cultures coming together in a unique setting. You need something for that special spell? Go on down to Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts and speak to Beverly. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. Check them out today. Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to all the canceled television series in science fiction, fantasy, horror, and sometimes comic book genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight we are talking about two more episodes of Witchblade the series. Before we begin, I wanted to point out and condolences to the friends and family of, the countless number of people who have died from COVID-19. But also, the last 2 weeks have been pretty bad for the comic book industry, as we've lost Denny O'Neil, former editor and writer of the Batman books, longtime editor of DC Comics. Jim Valiant posted about him. Jim Valiant does Terror Witch of the Black Rose, and he said that he was the man who hired him to work on Catwoman. If you listen to Fat Man Beyond, Kevin Smith reposted his 3-hour interview with Denny O'Neil, which is awesome to listen to. And we also lost director of two of the Batman movies and The Lost Boys, which I covered on the Vampire Movie Minute podcast. Joel Schumacher unfortunately passed away. We also lost Joe Sinoit, who is synonymous with Fantastic Four. He was the inker under Jack Kirby and Stan Lee on that book, and then eventually became the full-time artist, as well as the countless other characters that he worked on. But Fantastic Four is probably the number one thing he was known for. And we recently lost, as of yesterday, he turned 91 years old, the creator of the I Love New York logo, but he was also synonymous with comics, as he was the creator of the DC Bullet logo, which is probably the most famous DC comic logo look. It's the circle of DC with the DC logo in the middle, but with the stars like bullet holes around the DC symbol. He passed away. He worked for the New Yorker. Milton Glaser was his name, and he worked for the New Yorker magazine for a number of years as well. But he was the one who came up with the "I Love New York" slogan, which, if you're a horror fan, you can watch Jason Takes Manhattan, Friday the 13th Part 8. Jason slashes his way through the logo.
It's been a rough week.
Yeah, definitely. Usually, comic book creators die in months apart from each other. You know what I mean? Like, we lost Spider-Man's creators in the same year. Steve Ditko died in the summer, and Stan died that November, which is like, holy crap. Spider-Man became an orphan and lost both his parents in the same year. But months apart from each other, you know what I mean? So, really rough time in comic books as well as the rest of the world, and in Hollywood as well, because of the passing of Joel Schumacher. But we're going to jump right into these two episodes of Witchblade now here on the Dead TV Podcast.
Witchblade, Season 2, Episode 8, Hierophant, originally aired July 22nd, 2002. A killer known only as V tries to take over New York's organized crime syndicates, causing mayhem. But when the evidence gathered at the crime scenes includes the fingerprints of Sarah's long-dead father, Sarah must trust the Witchblade's powers to overcome her emotions and wage war with the greatest evil she has ever faced. Now, this episode opens with the crime syndicate heads basically gunning each other down, you know, kind of in a standoff. And the only one to walk away is Gallo. And so Gallo meets with Sarah and talks with him about what happened.
And when was the last time we saw Gallo?
That was in season one. She was really pissed off at him for killing her friend. No?
Nope. When did we think about the last time we saw Gallo? What happened and why we saw Gallo?
I don't know.
She prevented Danny from going into the theater that would get him killed.
Yes.
That was the last time we saw Gallo. And her and Danny both approached Gallo and taunted him. But because of her stopping the events from occurring, it created a new timeline for themselves.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I just currently watched the season finale of season two of Future Man, and Seth Rogen explains to our main character that you're not stopping anything in the timeline. You're creating millions of different possibilities. and that is a crime against the flow of time. Which, by the way, apparently is going to be the plot line of the upcoming Loki television series. Because Loki stole the Tesseract in the Endgame movie, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, what the hell does that mean? Well, if you saw the teaser for the Loki show, what is Loki? What does it look like happened to Loki?
I have not seen the teaser.
Oh, you need to see the teaser. Loki is in chains, and he looks like he's wearing a prison jumpsuit.
Wow.
And the reason why is because it's tied to an old bunch of what-if characters that actually monitor the flow of time and space. They're basically time cops. And they get real pissy when people mess with the flow of time.
As you do.
So a Hierophant is a person, especially a priest, ancient Greece, who interprets sacred mysteries or esoteric principles. That has nothing to do with the character V.
The Hierophant in this episode is referring to one of the tarot cards in her reading, and I'll go into that when we get to it.
Yes. The character V is kind of like a vigilante, kind of doing his own thing, but he's trying to bring the crime lords underneath him in a way. This is like
seems to have some sort of magical element. You know, he's quicker than quick. You know, he can deliver bodies to an office without making a sound. Just a lot of weird stuff happening with this character.
Right. Every time I kept hearing V being mentioned, it reminded me, of course, of a vigilante from a certain Alan Moore movie whose clip I have right here.
I can assure you I mean you no harm.
Who are you?
Who? Who is but the form following the function of what? And what I am is a man in a mask.
Well, I can see that.
Of course you can. I'm not questioning your powers of observation. I'm merely remarking upon the paradox of asking a masked man who he is.
Oh, right.
But on this most auspicious of nights, permit me then, in lieu of the more commonplace sobriquet, to suggest the character of this dramatis persona. Voila! In view, a humble vaudevillian veteran, cast vicariously as both victim and villain by the vicissitudes of fate. This visage, no mere veneer of vanity, is a vestige of the vox populi, now vacant, vanished. However, this valorous visitation of a bygone vexation stands vivified, and has vowed to vanquish these venal and virulent vermin, vanguarding vice and vouchsafing the violently vicious and voracious violation of volition.
So that clip is from V for Vendetta, which was by the Wachowski siblings, based on the Alan Moore comic book. I actually had the artist for that sign my copy of the comic. I've never met Alan Moore. I would love to, but he's, you know, he's Alan Moore. I'm not going to get into all that here. But that was really cool to meet the artist on V for Vendetta. I would love them to turn V for Vendetta into a TV series done correctly.
Like the way it is in the comic.
Not like the movie, which is okay, but I totally get all of Alan Moore's criticism behind it, and I get a lot of other people's criticism behind it. I mean, also, the Wachowskis were hot off The Matrix. You know, the third one had just come out. This was their next big project. Take it as you will. Separate the two, but Hugo Weaving is amazing in the role as the character of V. But I digress. So V in this is kind of a vigilante. V in that is the Guy Fawkes. You know, the Gunpowder Treaty, I've not watched that yet. Have you seen that? It starred Kit Harington from Game of Thrones.
I haven't.
He plays Guy Fawkes. Yeah, I've heard good things too. I do love the way V is described, though. V is described as Batman meets Osama bin Laden.
Ooh.
And I am 100% in agreement on that. He is a terrorist in a governmentally over-controlled system where the only superpower left in the world after a virus wiped out hundreds of thousands of people is the United Kingdom. Gee, and the government of the United States fell apart and then the United Kingdom became a police state. I'm not going to say anything else, but go watch Watchmen because... Just go watch the Watchmen TV series because that also is relevant to that.
In this one, V is basically a black card with red V on it, and then on the other side is the tarot card, the Hierophant. And so it keeps being brought
Hold
up.
Hold on a second. Sorry.
So the card has the Hierophant tarot image on one side. The other side is black with the big letter V. Now, the Hierophant card comes up over and over in this episode, and it's basically symbolic of the spiritual leader, this person. And, I'll get into it a little bit further as we go on here. In her visions for the Witchblade, she sees her father with white eyes. You know, and there's a lot of flashbacks to scenes with her father the entire episode. The Witchblade is trying to tell her something about this. It ends up being this huge mystery because the fingerprints are found, you know, on these cards. But this character, V, who's basically bullying all of the crime syndicates into falling into order underneath him, is so brutal, so tough, so hardcore that even Gallo is afraid of him, and which is why he reached out to Sarah Pizzini in the first place, because he is literally afraid to go against this guy, and yet he has to, because this is a foe much beyond him.
And they're very chummy together, which, considering that, he raped, supposedly, or at least alluded to in the first season, raped and killed her best friend of years ago that they got disconnected, so it brings up all these bad memories, Maria. And that plotline is never resolved this season, and Gallo and her act so chummy together. It's like, did we forget that he beat up and murdered your best friend from high school? Or writers, what are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, when the timeline resets, you know, she should still be angry over her friend, but because she also has the memories of what happened during that time, maybe she has enough time to kind of deal with it and get over it and doesn't have as much vengeful feelings towards Gallo that she can actually sit down with him and get some real information from him.
I'm sorry, I hate disconnect of continuity writing. Good example of continuity writing. Most of the time. Television series Friends. I thought they had decent continuity most of the time.
Yeah.
Bad continuity writing? The Big Bang Theory. Like, I'm rewatching it right now. I got a digital copy of the entire show, and I decided to rewatch it, because I haven't watched it since it all ended. Oh boy, those first few seasons are really rough. they don't write the men very well. They don't write Penny most of the time very well, but honestly, none of those characters are written very well. I get why people hate that show. By season 4 and 5, that show got much better. And they brought in the other female characters, so it diversified the show a lot more. But there is, like, whereas on Friends, when somebody is dating somebody, as an example, as it was a rom-com drama, they would let that character have an exit. Even if it was an episode, all self-contained, there is an explanation of why that character is not going to be on the show any longer. Whereas The Big Bang Theory, they just had characters disappear and either never mentioned to them, or a few episodes later it was like, oh yeah, that was a thing, and then we're not talking about it anymore.
Yeah, just mentioned in passing.
Like, for instance, Johnny Galecki's former co-star of Roseanne, disappears on that show. And then they bring in two female scientists on that show that she was exactly who she was. She was a female scientist character. You know, a foil for Penny, if you will. But on drama shows like this, I think they could do a little better sometimes with, like, mentioning a previous character that has been on the show. You know what I mean? And it's just like the writers forgot about this whole giant plot line that was the pilot movie's biggest part. Gallo killed Maria. Gallo killed Danny. Gallo and Sarah have a giant shootout in the museum that gets him killed and starts this entire internal affairs White Bull plotline through the rest of the first season. I digress.
We also see Gabriel in this episode. Cyberfaust sends a JPEG that is encoded with Enochian symbolism in order to get some information to Sarah. It's really unclear as to why Cyberfaust is doing this, but yet Ian Nottingham also meets with her and repeats some of the things that Cyberfaust would have said. So I still think that Ian Nottingham is Cyberfaust, but, you know, that's not confirmed. Gabriel passes Sarah over to a fortune teller, Madame Sestris. Madame Sestostris. And Gabriel said that she is one of a kind people.
Oh, is this the drag queen character played by
Roger Daltrey?
Roger Daltrey, who was in the last season as a priest.
Yes, in the episode of Legion, he plays Father Del Toro, which at the very end of this one, he also makes an appearance as Father Del Toro, just kind of overlooking the scene. But I think his presence here is supposed to show, like, the true evil that she is trying to face. What I don't know whether Madame Sestostris is actually supposed to also be Father Del Toro in disguise, you know, that type of character, or is it's an actual different person, like the actress playing a completely different person. When Sarah goes to the fortune teller speaks to her very kindly, very gently, and then does a reading for her. First, it's the High Priestess card, which is supposed to represent her. You know, she is, you know, the High Priestess in this scenario that's representative of Sarah herself. And then she places the Hierophant card on top of the High Priestess. Now, in a reading like this, this would typically mean two different people. So she places the Hierophant on top of the High Priestess. And so it's to illustrate, like, secret knowledge, a balance with the High Priestess. The Devil card crosses her. So the Devil is, I think, in this spread, supposed to be a representation of true evil, but it could also mean temptation, violence, that type of thing.
Speaking of tarot cards, if you go on to Kickstarter right now, look up Jim and Holly, creators of Tarot Witch of the Black Rose, their Raven Hex one-shot, Holly will do a tarot card reading for you, one of 10 backer tiers.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. By the way, the guy who plays Sarah's father, or the clone, which that's basically what he is. He's a clone.
A spiritual clone.
A career of this and that stuff or whatever, but he became an executive producer all of a sudden, and he's currently executive producer of Godfather of Harlem, which I've never seen before, but stars Forrest Whitaker. His name's James A. Chason, and he was in the movie Kazam with Shaquille O'Neal. So if you want to go watch that.
That's a blast from the past. Okay, so in this tarot reading, I don't actually see the full spread of cards. There's no scene on the tape with the entire full spread. But what we do see is we see on the right, we have the Tower card, which is reminiscent of divine change, liberation, freedom, destruction, and that's in the future position. At the top is the Death card, and that's in the best possible outcome position. So, you know, that's drastic change, could mean actual death. Below her is the Ace of Swords. Now, that card means a beginning, or it could mean raw power or victory, sharp mind. And that is basically the foundation of the problem, you know, foundation of what's all going on. That could also represent the Witchblade in this spread. On her left is in the past, which is the Moon card, which is about illusions and trickery, psychic messages. So this is talking about the psychic messages she's receiving about images from her father. And then on the very, like, in the traditional Celtic cross spread that she has here, the very bottom is the hopes and dreams, or the inner feelings position, and that one is the Three of Swords, which is meaning intense heartache. So what she fears is that intense heartache and the pain caused by this. So Madame, she says that this is the most powerful, you know, selection of cards she's ever seen, and she gets scared and then breaks her falsetto voice character in order to, like, tell her to, you know, pester off. And you know, the wind blowing away her cards isn't one of her own tricks. She's really freaked out. And then after Sarah leaves, Madame's eyes go red and then white. And then right after there, they find out that the fingerprints on the Hierophant card were actually her father's, which then sends Sarah into this emotional catastrophe where they actually dig up her father's body in order to figure out whether his hand was taken, and it was.
Which is kind of creepy, because she shows up at Gabriel's place, and he says, well, what have you been doing? And he goes, well, digging up a body. And he's like, fine, whatever, don't tell me. And it's like, why would you believe her? Considering what you know about the Witchblade and everything, and her being a cop, digging up a body is just, like, blowing your nose.
Yeah, and also, truth be told, in Gabriel's line of work, there is a lot of grave digging. So I don't know why that he would be so squeamish about it. Ian Nottingham talks to Kenneth Irons through the mirror. So it's almost seeming like Ian is going a little bit crazy. I don't know if what he's actually experiencing is real, because Ian doesn't have the Witchblade. But Lazar is around.
But
he's
Ian is
the window at the cafe.
But Ian is basically a clone of Kenneth Irons, and that's probably the bloodline connection to the Witchblade.
Possibly.
Because he is, right. I mean, they revealed that previously. He's basically,
yeah.
He's like, what's his name in Star Wars? Which was the big disappointment for a lot of people, that Boba Fett is nothing but a clone of his father.
Oh, yeah.
He's not his own character.
Jango.
Yeah, Jango Fett is the prototype for all of the clone army, which makes the Jedi the dumbest motherfuckers in the goddamn galaxy to go, gee, do you think we should employ an army of clone troopers based off a guy who tried to assassinate one of our biggest allies in the Senate?
Yeah.
Does that ring anyone's fucking bells in a galaxy far, far away?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I digress. Boba Fett is a clone of his father, but from birth, grown naturally, whereas all the other clones are basically adulthood in 6 months.
Yeah. Sarah's father appears to her, and basically is like a guy in a suit with white glowing eyes, and that's not really her father. You know, it might be DNA from him or some sort of spiritual shadow clone thing, but she ends up stabbing him. And as he falls on her, he transforms into a mist. And you see, like, Father Del Toro kind of looking over the scene, which is that, you know, Legion connection, and then just kind of disappears. And that's basically the episode.
And tidies up very well. Gotta love when a body just disappears.
Yes.
No fuss, no muss.
No crimes to actually investigate. There's no body.
Right, right. Well, that's all the notes I have for this episode as well. We'll be back after this quick podcast break for our next episode here on the Dead TV Podcast.
Greetings! We are the Retro Reductopus Cephala Podcast, a bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome. He's right! We wax philosophic about lots of geeky crap, like old video games and movies, toys, cartoons, I don't know, help me out here.
Music, pants, quoting video games that don't have dialogue,
Shabibin,
tasty news,
unnecessarily long Japanese onomatopoeia,
butt breathers,
uncomfortable nature facts,
or how to install a semiflange.
And unlike all those other podcasts, we at Retro Redoctopus have an exciting rotating host schedule.
Do we?
We sure do.
So, if you didn't like the guy flapping his gums this week,
like me,
worry not, gentle listener. Next week, we'll have a whole new host.
A problem.
Hey, they might still suck, but they'll suck differently.
And you know what's really cool? Retro Redoctopus is part of the Dorkening and NEPR Podcast Networks, with new episodes every Tentacle Tuesday.
Which is like every other Tuesday. We named it.
Anyways, you can listen to us at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or any podcast player cool enough to carry the only show that celebrates all things that make growing up awesome.
I am vengeance.
am the knight. I am Batman.
You can take out the trash.
I don't have time for that now. We have two podcasts I have to create a new promo for.
What? Both JLUcast and Supermates?
Yes. JLUcast, where you and I discuss the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited animated series from Bruce Timm and Company.
And Supermates, our original show where we talk about all sorts of geeky stuff, including our annual House of Frankenstein series on classic horror films. Yeah.
That's it. But how do we combine this into one promo?
I have no idea, but it sounds like we're doing our original Supermates promo all over again.
I kind of think we are, but hey, other folks kind of aped it, so it must have worked.
Well, why don't you get to work taking out the trash, and I'll finish up.
Great.
So join us, Cindy.
And Chris.
On JLUcast and Supermates, both proudly part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, found at fireandwaterpodcast.com and on iTunes.
And we're back on the Dead TV Podcast with the next episode.
Season 2, Episode 9, Veritas, originally aired August 5th, 2002. A man named Tickner is on the run from two mysterious men who kill him after he sends a message to Gabriel. It turns out Tickner had a tape with evidence convicting the mysterious men and their organization of some major murder. Gabriel and Sarah recover the tape, are forced to shoot two of the men who are government federal agent types, and go on the run while Sarah has visions of a mysterious Boston-accented man talking to her about politics and evil. Sarah ends up captured by one of the conspirators, who are a mysterious cabal who plan on taking over the U.S. secretly. She escapes, but the conspiracy lets her live in return for a favor, and they return the captive Gabriel to her.
Now,
this episode was stupid.
This episode is a mixed bag of stupid. I completely forgot who the ghost is at the very end when he keeps visiting Sarah until I was just like, oh, has some bad CGI.
And bad voice acting, because that does not sound like JFK whatsoever.
No, the actor who would play the spirit JFK in it, it's JFK's face on the actor named Victor Sleazak. Most recently showed up in Nos4A2. Have you seen that show?
No.
It is one of the highest rated shows on AMC right now. It stars Zachary Quinto from Star Trek as a vampire that kidnaps children and keeps them in a dreamlike state called Candyland while he basically eats and murders them. And a young girl has a psychic connection to him, follows him all over the country trying to stop him. And it's based on a novel by Joe Hill. And it is, I saw the first two episodes, it's not bad. Our main character is this tattooed motorcycle riding girl. So it's, you know, those are the two main characters. Ashley Cummings plays her on it. But yeah, the vampire is played by Zachary Quinto, his name Charlie Max. And he is creepy as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a devourer of children, yeah.
Yeah.
And you keep them in a dreamlike Candyland state while you basically feed on them.
Yeah, very creepy.
Yeah, so he's known for that, but he was on Blue Bloods, Hell on Wheels, The Messengers, a bunch of stuff I've never seen before. But I do like when they go to Gabriel's apartment and he's got like the Russian model there or something.
Yeah, Bulgarian.
Bulgarian. What was her name? Was it Susie? No. What was the Bulgarian's model name?
You know what? I might not have written it down.
Is it Susie? Because there's two characters listed at the bottom, uncredited. Susie and Murder Victim.
Yeah, I didn't write down her name.
Because it's the
only... She was speaking in a foreign language most of the time.
Right. Sexy as hell. I love the fact that Danny and Jake are just like, oh. we get into Jake's connection to the FBI. And heavily in this episode, because Danny is probably like, why are you so chummy with the FBI? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, this episode is
the whole plot
kind of
line we're going to get to in season
time.
3. Oops, sorry, go ahead.
This episode is kind of a race for time. The agents are trying to get this object that has been left behind for Gabriel. In the very beginning, our dead man... sends Gabriel a voicemail with numbers in it that translate into actual GPS code, so to point to exactly the place where he left the undeveloped film. This undeveloped film, which is a classified object, undeveloped, many, many decades old. Well, maybe not many decades. JFK was assassinated November 22nd, 1963. So, you know, a few decades. So this tape supposedly changes everything the U.S. knows about the assassination. They're not even sure through this entire episode what's really on the tape, but it is told to them, because they didn't actually personally see the tape, it's told to them that and we get it as an audience, get it at the very, very end. This is the CIA's commands to each other to prepare to assassinate JFK when Lee Harvey Oswald actually does it. So in this episode, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around. The friend that's the FBI agent, Dick Arnes, is killed, and they have to race away from them, and Sarah can't really turn to anyone. Gabriel gets stolen. Like, a lot of things happen in this episode. The film developer gets killed just for actually developing the film. Everything basically comes around to the same point. The point is, the secret organization has power in the CIA and the government in order to take out their political rivals, political people, and they almost took out JFK, but didn't because someone else did. I was actually going to go into a whole mess of things regarding the conspiracy theories that are kind of alluded to in this episode and JFK conspiracy theories, but you know what? This is not the podcast for it. If you want to actually listen to a real deep, in-depth look at the JFK assassination conspiracy theories, you can go to Last Podcast on the Left. They did a full series on this, and I highly recommend it. It's very informative. I won't bog down our Witchblade podcast with that.
Another great place to go to for that is any podcast that has covered the film JFK by Oliver Stone, starring Kevin Costner. I highly recommend it. It's a great movie and a great look at the conspiracy of JFK.
The title of this episode is called Veritas. Now, Veritas is the goddess of truth. And you'll see this very famous painting. It's been on a lot of memes recently. But it's a famous painting from Jean-Léon Gérôme from 1896. And it's a nude woman rising out of a well. Now, the goddess Veritas is actually shown or depicted as hidden inside a well, and truth being naked because of naked truth.
Huh.
And this is, yeah. So the painting itself was depicted from a quote that the philosopher Democritus said, quote, "Of truth we know nothing, for truth is in a well." And that is basically the meaning of what's going on in this entire episode, is that they're trying to find what's hidden away from the American people, away from them, and bringing it to the surface so that truth can be revealed. That doesn't happen in this episode. The agents actually trade the tape, the film, for Gabriel, and then nothing else happens. They allow her to go, even though she has this knowledge. Since she hasn't actually seen the tape, they kind of let her live. And then we find that the ghost she's been talking to in her visions is actually JFK. It makes no sense whatsoever. I did not like this episode.
Yeah, just the JFK thing just felt really out of place. They could have used something else, but I get that there's a conspiracy and they want to link two conspiracies together, but then that's just like linking any conspiracy to JFK.
Yeah, there really isn't anything in this episode that progresses the characters or the plotline, overall arcs for Witchblade.
Absolutely not. There is nothing in this that moves the plot of the Witchblade storyline forward.
Mm. Danny shows up and warns her about the feds, and Ian Nottingham shows up about it, but
Where does our resident spooky figure Lazar come in? I forget.
Lazar can be seen in the cafe that she meets the FBI agent. He's sitting at the counter, whereas they're talking in a booth.
Gotcha. What's that like, sitting at a counter in a booth with other people? That's, I don't know what that, I don't know what that
I know,
like.
It's been so long, 6 months in COVID, it seems.
Well, next time we record, we're going to have a couple better, a couple of better guest stars, like Eric Roberts will be, one of the, in the episode. So maybe the acting will also be better because the acting was kind of bland here.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all the notes I have for this episode of Witchblade, the series. I'd like to thank everyone for checking out the podcast. We have two episodes left to go, actually, so we only have one more episode to record, and then we're going to be jumping into a time machine and trying to get a history report completed, or something like that. But we will have a special guest on connected to the upcoming show that we will be talking about for a few episodes on the Dead TV podcast before we get to our long show, which will be War of the Worlds, which will take us into next year.
And I do want to point out, I recently checked out our Stitcher page, and we have a review. A person named Jenny Bear gave us 5 stars with the title, Old Shows Getting Great Love. Absolutely love the Addams Family coverage. So many things I didn't know. The sound quality isn't the best. They need better microphones. Whenever you guys interview someone, you're always so happy. It's great to hear. Can you guys do the Munsters? My answer to that, no.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to be doing the Munsters. We did the Addams Family because nobody's done the Addams Family before, and I don't know if anyone's done the Munsters, but I'm not as big a fan of the Munsters as I am the Addams Family.
Again, yeah, I am totally an Addams fan. I am not really a Munsters fan. They treat each other horribly. I might give the show an overall review, but episode by episode of watching the Munsters, it's just a long show, and we have other things that we'd like to get to. So sorry, Jenny Bear.
Yeah, we got our next comedy that we're going to get to for long term will probably be Reaper after War of the Worlds. So we'll actually be coming forward in time, whereas in War of the Worlds, we're going back to the 80s. We're actually pretty much going to be covering a lot of territory we did on Friday the 13th, the series, with a lot of the same people were on both shows, as well as a couple guest stars will be on the show with us. So we'll when we get there, we will. But unfortunately, no Munsters. We do like to thank you for checking us out. Go to the Dead TV Podcast on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter at ChrisDSAV. And you can send us an email, thatradiohorror@gmail.com, or please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Apologize for sometimes the audio quality is terrible. It just depends on where we're recording and the internet sometimes, too. But hopefully this episode has had great recording. So, but one more episode of Witchblade, and then which we will also be talking about the Witchblade anime show. We're not going to do that as a separate episode because we want to get into I almost said Back to the Future, but we want to get into our time travel comedy show, short-lived very quickly. But we'll talk about Witchblade the anime as well. Mr. Zeneca will watch at least the first two episodes of Witchblade the anime to give us her overall thoughts on. On that.
On the TNA.
Yeah, it is. It is something, that's for sure. but it is anime, so you always have to think about that. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back in 1 week for the finale of Witchblade.
Good night.